Chapter 3. Guys in the neighborhood made easy money selling dope, but Roiland knew which direction that street was going. Straight down. He never wanted to be the one standing before the judge wearing steel bracelets. Roiland's father did time twice, and each time he came out meaner and more useless than before. Roiland wanted no part of that. There was only one way to get the money he'd needed. He had to ask his neighbor, Ambrose Miller. Mr. Miller surely had the money. Roiland knew his leather wallet was always stuffed with cash, and he never went anywhere to spend his money. On most days, he sat in his worn, overstuffed chair, watching TV and nibbling on cookies. He explained many times why he refused to keep his money in a bank.
When I was young, them banks all went belly up, and no one could get their money. If that ever happens again, I'm going to be okay. And you will too, boy. I'll make sure of that, he once told Roiland.
When Roiland was small, he and Mr. Miller were very close. Mr. Miller had a collection of tiny race cars, and he would always bring them out so Roiland could play. As a boy, Roiland spent many afternoons pushing the cars through the little living room and hallway in Mr. Miller's apartment. Since he started working, Roiland did not visit the old man as much. But he knew if there was anyone he could turn to in a tight spot, it was Mr. Miller. Roiland returned to his apartment, wondering how he would explain things to his old friend. He had never asked Mr. Miller for anything, and he felt strange doing it now. In recent weeks, Tuttle, the building manager, had complained about how Mr. Miller was going senile and that he did not take care of his apartment. Once, Tuttle even threatened to send a letter to Mr. Miller's out-of-state daughter, saying that the old man should be put into a nursing home. But no matter what Tuttle said, Mr. Miller always seemed fine to Roiland. He was sure that if he told Mr. Miller about Corey, his old friend would try to help him. Roiland walked down the long hallway towards Mr. Miller's apartment. He was startled by Tuttle, who was emptying trash nearby. He cackled when he saw Roiland stop at Mr. Miller's door.
What are you going in there for? He got no sense, old as he is. He just sits in the chair. I think he's demented. Wonder why he don't die. What good is a demented old man like him anyway?
Tuttle moved on then, still cackling, and dragged a large bag of trash behind him. Roiland knocked gently on Mr. Miller's door. The old door slowly creaked open. Roiland could see Mr. Miller asleep in his chair. The TV was blaring loudly.
Mr. Miller, Roiland said as he came into the room,
but the old man slept on, snoring with an occasional burst of sound that shook his frail body. Roiland glanced at the end table and saw the wallet by the lamp. There it sat, bulging with the money that Roiland so desperately needed. If Mr. Miller were awake, he would surely want to help Roiland out. What good was the money to him anyway? Shaking, Roiland picked up the fat wallet. He drew out some bills, 50s, 20s, 10s. Roiland began to count them out. He took 2 50s, 5 20s, and 5 10s. There was more in the wallet, but he did not take any more.
I'll pay you back, Mr. Miller, he whispered.
It's not really stealing, Roiland thought as he took the money, just borrowing from a friend. And yet as he turned to leave Mr. Miller's apartment, Roiland was deeply ashamed. Only the image of Corey flooding through his mind could have made him do this. Shoving the money deep into his pocket, Roiland rushed from the apartment, nearly colliding with Tuttle, who was mopping the hallway.
Boy, watch your step,
the little man growled as Roiland raced past him. Roiland ignored Tuttle's comment and sprinted out to his Honda. He had to purchase the gold necklace before someone else did. All he could think of was placing the sparkling chain on Corey's neck and hearing her scream with joy when he gave it to her. Once in the mall, Roiland dashed into the jewelry store and bought the necklace with $50 of his own money and $250 from Mr. Miller's wallet.
Well, you're certainly going to make somebody happy, the sales clerk said cheerfully. I bet you worked long and hard for the money.
Roiland had been smiling, but now his smile faded.
Why did the clerk say that? Was it sarcasm? Did she suspect something?
Roiland snatched up the box and hurried from the store. He felt entirely different than he had ever felt in his life.
As he left the mall, he felt certain that people were watching him, judging him. Corey's birthday was on a Friday, and Roiland thought he would ask her out to dinner. He would wait until they finished eating, and then he would hand her the box. She would know right away what was in it, and she would be so grateful to Roiland that she would want to be his girlfriend forever. Roiland parked his Honda and headed for the apartment, the small necklace box hidden in his jacket pocket. He hoped no one in his family would ask him what he had been doing all evening. He was too excited and nervous to face anybody just now. Roiland was in luck. His mother had gone to bed early after a long day of work, and his sister did not seem to notice him creep into the bedroom. Quickly, he hid the tiny box under his mattress, undressed, and got into bed. As long as everyone thought he was asleep, no one would ask him what he had done since school ended. For hours, Roiland tossed and turned in his bed. Taking that money from Mr. Miller kept haunting him, no matter how hard he tried to forget it. Mr. Miller had always been his friend, his best friend, his only friend. The next morning, Roiland did not say much at breakfast. He kept thinking how thrilled Corey would be when she got her gift, and he kept wondering if Mr. Miller missed his money yet. As Roiland hurried from the apartment to go to school, he tried not to look at Mr. Miller's door with its chipped paint. Roiland consoled himself with thinking about how he would return the money. The minute he got paid, he would slip a couple of tens into Mr. Miller's wallet. Lately, the old man was often confused. He would just think he had mislaid the money. Then little by little, Roiland would pay it all back. Then, he would not be a thief anymore. All day at school, two emotions kept clashing in Roiland's head. He was full of excitement about the wonderful moments with Corey that lay ahead of him, and he was nagged about the guilt overtaking the money from Mr. Miller. Roiland had often daydreamed in class, but today each hour passed by in a blur because he was lost in his own private world. The only time Roiland was able to focus was when he was with Corey. In history class, she sat next to him, and they scribbled little notes back and forth to each other. Roiland had so much fun he nearly forgot he was in class, until Ms. Eckerly warned them. "I hope you two have as much to write in your history reports as you do to each other," she said. A few kids in the class chuckled. Roiland did not worry. He had done most of the report already during a slow night at work. It did not matter anyway, he thought. He never got above a C on anything, no matter how hard he worked. Later that day, Roiland met Corey for lunch. He had to keep himself from telling her about the present he had gotten her.
"So, what are you getting me for my birthday?"
Corey asked playfully, smiling at him as he took a bite of pizza. Roiland could feel his heart flutter. He still could not believe how attractive she was and how great she treated him compared to other girls at Bluford. "I might have gotten a little something for you," he said, trying to act calm. "But you're going to have to wait." Roiland could barely stop himself from running home, getting the necklace, and giving it to her right then. He knew that once he gave it to her, he would have the girl of his dreams.
"Roiland, I can't believe you're teasing me like this,"
Corey said, folding her arms across her chest.
"Can't you give me a little hint?"
She formed her lips into a perfect pout.
"I'll say this," Roiland began, full of pride. "Once you see it, you're going to want to be my girl forever."
A smile spread across Corey's face.
"Ooh,"
she cooed.
"I can't wait."
As soon as lunch ended and Corey left, Roiland's day again faded into a thick fog. The longer he was away from her, the more he became lost in his own thoughts of Mr. Miller. He could not wait to get home and talk to the old man to see if he missed his money. If he did not even notice it was gone, then the pressure to return it quickly would be off Roiland. But if Mr. Miller was really upset about the missing money, Roiland might even tell him the truth right away. At least then, Roiland thought, he would be honest with his old friend. Coming home that afternoon, Roiland noticed Tuttle standing on the sidewalk.
"I've been waiting for you, boy. You want to talk to me about repairing the busted light in the bathroom? Or about us having no hot water?" Roiland snapped.
"Something a little more serious than that,"
Tuttle said, squinting his beady eyes. He blinked rapidly, and his sandpapery voice was low, as if he had something horrible to say.
"Poor Mr. Miller died last night.
he said.
Mr. Miller died,
Roland gasped.
But
he was about to say he saw him last evening, and he seemed fine, sleeping in his chair before the television. But Roland thought better of saying that.
Yeah, he died. Poor old wretch. Had a heart attack. It was the shock that killed him. I'm sure of that,
Tuttle said, pausing for his words to have the desired effect.
The theft, you know.
I don't know what you're talking about, Roland cried, but a volcano of grief and guilt exploded within him.
He woke up and found the money missing from his wallet. And then he had a fatal seizure. So in a way, Roland, you're guilty of murder. You see, if you're committing a crime against someone and they die as a result, well, that's murder.
You're crazy. I never took no money.
What are you talking about? I saw you, boy. I saw you sneak into his room, fiddle with his wallet last night. I saw you come out and run like a thief. I didn't think you took no more than a couple of dollars, so I didn't say anything. But when the poor old fool cried out to me and said a lot of money was gone, he was clutching at his chest and flailing on the floor. I could tell he was a goner. I would have called for help, but I knew he was dead. I used to work in a mortuary, and I know what death looks like,
Tuttle said, seeming to enjoy the look of growing torment on Roland's face.
Now, I don't think we need to involve the police, do you? Miller was real old, and his time would have come pretty quickly anyway, so this is what I like to do. We don't say anything to anyone. Just let on that he moved somewhere else. With your help, I can get that body downstairs once it gets dark. Bury him down there, and let that be the end of it.
You're crazy, Roland gasped.
Watch your mouth, boy. I saw what you did. Don't you ever forget that. Only reason I'm willing to cover this up is I'm getting too old for all these chores around the building, and I'm expecting that out of gratitude for how I helped you hide your crime, you'll be helping me around this place. So take your choice. Do things my way, or we'll just call the police right now and tell them what happened. What do you say, boy?
I don't want nothing to do with this,
Roland cried, backing away from Tuttle.
I ain't buried nobody.
Then I'll just call the police. Oh, by the way, I carefully slipped Mr. Miller's wallet into a plastic bag to preserve your fingerprints.
You in big trouble, boy.
Tuttle's cackling laughter grew more sinister. He reached up with his grimy fingers and adjusted his greasy baseball cap. Roland closed his eyes as waves of terror washed over him. His father had talked a lot about life in prison, the horror of it. Roland could not face being arrested, spending years in prison, having his whole future destroyed.
Okay,
Roland whispered.
What do you want me to do?